and welcome to the MotoGP podcast. This week we have another feature for you, and it's centered around one of the best in the last couple of decades in the sport, which is Casey Stoner.
Yeah, not just one of the best in the last couple of decades, arguably one of the greatest ever. The 2007-2011 MotoGP World Champion is here with a feature interview, mostly him talking, not me and Fran always interjecting, about everything throughout his MotoGP career.
Yep, so first up, obviously, we should start where his real big success began, which was the 2007 season, which was his first Premier Class Championship, coming from almost nowhere. Stoner did have a pretty good record in the smaller classes, took his first win at the end of the 2003 125 Championship, that was in Valencia. And then 2004 in the 125 Championship, a few more podiums and another win, that one in Malaysia. 2005 in 250s, he was really a force to be reckoned with and took 5 wins that year. So you could kind of see when he moved up to MotoGP for 2006 that the guy definitely had an awful lot of talent. And it didn't take long for that talent to surface. In MotoGP, like I said, his rookie year, 2006, a classic year in itself, he took his first podium in Turkey, which was only the 3rd race of the year. Then followed a whole host of top 5, top 6s, super impressive showing for the rookie. But then came 2007, and the season for which he would change to the factory Ducati squad for the first time. He didn't know then, but he was about to make some history with the Borgo Panigale factory, and it started off in pretty dream fashion. The 2007 season opener in Qatar saw Stoner battle Rossi and take that first win of the year. Next time out was a little more difficult, and it was just a 5th in the Spanish Grand Prix. So had it been a fluke? No, it had not. Turkey and China both saw Stoner take back to the top step once again. Another podium in Le Mans, and the momentum just kept on rolling for the Australian. So there were another 5 wins, Catalunya, the British Grand Prix, Laguna Seca, Brno, and San Marino, all came to give him a huge lead that led him going into the Japanese Grand Prix with a chance at the crown. And that day, it was actually his worst finish of the season, a 6th, but that let him wrap up the title in Motegi. He wasn't done winning though, even though he had the crown, and there were another 2 wins at Phillip Island, his great playground, and then again at Sepang to finish off that season in almost incredibly perfect fashion. Valencia was 2nd, not quite the win, but an incredible season for Stoner and that first title. So here's some thoughts from the 2011 and 2011 world champion on that first incredible dream championship in the Premier Class.
I don't know. I mean, the first one, we never looked at it as if there was a huge mountain to climb, basically. From when I first jumped on the bike, we knew we were going to have a hard season, especially off season, trying to develop it as best we could before the start of the season. Jumping back to the 800cc, had sort of caught everybody a little bit off guard, and we were struggling a lot with the bike, with setup and trying to get the bike to handle a little better. Obviously we had a fantastic engine, but our handling could be a lot better. So we just sort of got to work with that, and we were just looking at the season race by race. From the very beginning, it was just tackle the first race and then go after the second race. But we definitely didn't expect the season to go nearly as well as what it did. And to win that first race really just put us on a roller coaster that carried us through that whole season. So, I had some goals at the start of the year, and pretty much the only one I had was to win one race before the end of the season. And to win that first race was massively unexpected, especially like I said, from the short testing program that we had. The beginning of it was really, really tough, and it wasn't until more or less the last test before that race in Qatar that we started to really understand the bike and put it in motion somewhere where we were comfortable. Basically that first win was massively unexpected, and our speed advantage was hugely unexpected as well. So that track worked really, really well for us, that bike, everything, year after year, to be honest. But also we were quick there the year before on a Honda, so the track suited me, suited the bike, the whole situation just came together and it was fantastic. even when the bike wasn't working particularly well at a circuit, we still got a fantastic result. And when we could win, and when everything was working well, we did win. We made the most of it, and you know, that really carried us through that season. So I don't think we looked as if it was sort of Dave and Goliath's thing. You know, I believe, you know, we just a lot of hard work. If it was the same bike that we first jumped on in Valencia in the end of 2006, then, you know, we wouldn't have won the championship with that bike. But it was accumulation of all the engineers, myself, everybody worked their butts off. And, you know, eventually that's what got us the title.
So with everything clearly going so well for the Ducati camp and Casey, at what point did those guys start to realise that the title was actually a possibility?
I'd say probably the midpoint of the season after Sachsenring. It wasn't a good day for us. You know, we really struggled because of the tyres were blistering. Valentino had fallen off during that race and given us a big buffer in the championship. And after that point, we knew that with a couple more good results, we can clinch the championship also before the end. But we never started riding in a protective manner at all. You know, we were still going after race win. And it wasn't until Japan, when we won the title, that we had the worst result of the year. Maybe riding a little bit too protectively, but, you know, we ended up doing the job. So it was just, you know, when things go your way, they go your way. And for us that year, it really did.
So it was the first title for Ducati, and it was obviously the first Premier Class crown for Stoner as well. So what was it like within that camp? Was it really, how it seemed, a dream season?
Very much a dream season. Also Nolan Helmets, my longtime sponsor, as their first MotoGP championship. You know, it was so many things and aspects to that year that just went fantastically for us. You know, and we all look back at it still with very fond memories, and it's nice to think that, you know, I was able to create a lot of those firsts. It was a great feeling. Of course, you know, for any manufacturer, it's huge. You know, not just Ducati. I think any manufacturer is why they race. It's why they turn up every weekend to try and capture that, not only race wins, but that championship at the end of the year. And, you know, we got the trifecta that year as well. You know, we got the teams, the riders, and the manufacturers. So it was really that perfect season. And, you know, that was just huge for us in Ducati. And everybody that put in so many years of hard work to see it pay off was something that, you know, I was really proud of.
But what was it like having such a sudden rise to the top? So unexpected and so many celebrations. How do you even cope with that level of pressure but also success at the very same time?
To be honest, the whole last part of the season was a blur because, you know, I went from basically being an unknown the year before in 2006, and then 2007, even right up until I won the first race, I was really an unknown as far as you know, popularity, as far as what anybody expected of me during racing. So all of a sudden, it all came onto me in a big rush. And to be honest, after we won the World Championship, it was more relief than a massive celebration for me. You know, all I wanted to do was go and stay, you know, quietly with the family and get out of this sort of hectic place, I suppose, for a little while. Because it literally came from nothing. You know, I'd never had such a chance to win a world championship in any of the lower categories. And then all of a sudden I jumped to MotoGP and in my second season we're clinching it early. So it was, it really was a lot to take in, and it's easy now to look back and say I should have handled things differently, but like I said, I went from nothing to something that was extremely popular, and then that I struggled with that somewhat. So yeah, that last part of the season, all I can remember is the next season, the beginning of the next season.
So obviously, Andrea Dovizioso has come pretty close in the last couple of seasons to taking the crown, but no one's really achieved the same incredible results with Ducati that Stoner did since he left the mark. So does he think that that brings his title a little bit more value?
I think so in some ways, but at the same time, you know, I don't look at what everybody else is doing or what everybody else had trouble with. You know, I think during our period at Ducati, we improved the bike all the way. We had one season that was a little rough on us, which was 2010. We struggled to make the bike competitive until the end of the season. 2009, I was unwell in the middle of the season and basically was impossible to finish the season out until we fixed the problem or understood what it was. So I'm kind of disappointed in some ways with what we ended up achieving in Ducati, because I felt like we should have achieved a lot more. But that's the way things go. You know, we can't look back and you know, be disappointed with that. So, you know, realistically, we only ever sort of worried about our own achievements, I suppose, rather than looking at what everybody else did or didn't do on the same bike.
So as Stoner says, it didn't quite continue in the same vein as 2007 for the Australian on the Ducati. 2008 was another pretty impressive season, and there were six wins that the guys racked up together. 2009, though, saw illness interrupt the season and a push at the crown. But then 2010, you could tell it was getting a little more difficult for the two to get it done. So there were five races at the start of that season where Stoner was not on the podium, which would have been pretty unheard of in the first 3 years of their partnership together when he was at full health. Then you had a few more podiums mid-season 2010, and then finally Aragon, Japan and Australia were the two's final three wins together.
After the 2010 season and that far more difficult year, the paths between Stoner and Ducati diverged. Ducati failed to win another race until the 2016 Austrian GP with Andrea Iannone. But Stoner, he moved to Repsol Honda and forged a different path back in 2011. How was that change and how different were those bikes?
I think, you know, the Ducati liked to move and wiggle and everything a little bit, but I think it was just because, again, we'd worked hard in the off season in the end of 10, beginning of 11. 2010 was hard for me because we weren't competitive in the first half of the season. Yes, we could make podiums, but I wasn't there threatening race wins, and that was hard for me. So I worked especially hard over the off season before 11. And we were ready for it. You know, we started the season really strong, had some difficult moments early in the season, and then had to really find our momentum and try and gain back the points that we lost. And you know, everything just worked. We like I said, we did all the work in the off season, and when it goes your way, it goes your way, and that was another season that was just meant for us. I think Ducati in its day was unbeatable for speed, not just on the straight, but everything. When we got the setup right and all the details ticked off, it really was unbeatable. And then the Honda was just a little bit more at that time, coming from 2010 to 11. 2010, we struggled with the Ducati. In 11, we got along really well with the Honda. So, you know, it was a little bit easier to set the bike up, so I had more time then to fine-tune everything, just to get the details a little better, and that allowed us to, I suppose, race with a little bit more comfort in many of the races. So, you know, we can say it was easier, but it was still a very, very hard championship for us.
Us by then meant a very different team and manufacturer, which is actually the most successful in the history of the sport, obviously Honda. And it did very much go their way, with Stoner wrapping up the championship and key rival Jorge Lorenzo forced to bow out that season. So it was his second crown in 2011 and for a second different manufacturer. So in that career, Stoner left behind at the end of an injury-affected 2012. What is his proudest moment?
To be honest, like when I was most proud of myself was normally after a race where I knew I couldn't have done anything more. You know, sometimes I didn't even win that race. But we'd worked our butts off all weekend, you know, it's a boring answer for everybody. Everybody wants to hear, no, it was because I won on two different manufacturers. For me, I don't care of statistics. I don't look at those things. I'm not trying to get a higher number of wins than anybody else. I'd still be racing if I wanted to do that. And I'm confident, you know, I could put myself further up on the list, but it wasn't about that for me. You know, it was always about personal achievements, so I didn't need to do them publicly. My achievements were on track when I knew I'd done a perfect lap in qualifying. There's no such thing as perfect, but you know, a fantastic lap in qualifying. Or I'd done a race where I was on my limit for the entire race and didn't make a mistake. That was when, you know, I really felt I achieved the most. But yeah, it's quite the opposite of what, you know, everybody else seems to always come across or portray.
So I think everybody else would most likely remember Stoner not for a perfect race or for a lack of mistakes, almost impossible to perceive by any onlooker, but rather his incredible talent, those displays on track, and also his rivalries throughout his time in MotoGP. Arguably, well, I think certainly the biggest of those, and one of the biggest ever, would be Stoner versus Rossi. That will be remembered forever.
It will. And asked which races he'd pick out as some of his best, the Australian mentions two at Laguna Seca, his last two. But that provides us with the perfect segue to talk about that moment at that track a couple of years before, back in 2008, when the Australian and the Italian clashed at the Corkscrew in that incredibly famous moment. But if you think you know what he'll say, not sure you will. It's pretty interesting insight from him, and a move intended to do one thing actually seemed to achieve the opposite.
I think that moment, quite honestly, was probably the best thing that could have ever happened to me. You know, if I didn't go through that moment and understand a little bit more of that situation, then it wouldn't have made me as strong as what I ended up in my career. I think that moment transformed me, I suppose you could say, and basically made me understand a little bit more of this world, this paddock, what I needed to do to succeed in it and how to overcome those sort of things. So you know, from that moment on, I never let that moment happen again. And you know, that was a crucial moment in my career for me, and for me that's where I made a step up.
So that step up kept Stoner as one of the fastest men in the world. And fast forward to 2011, there would come another famous clash between the Australian and the Italian. Jerez, that season, they raced in the wet. It saw Rossi lose control on a wet patch down into turn one and slide out of contention, also right into the side of Stoner. The Italian, he got back in the race. The Australian wasn't able to, however. Next came possibly one of the most famous quotes in the last 20 years of Grand Prix racing. I, for one, definitely use it fairly frequently in my daily life. Not gonna lie, don't know about you,
me
fan.
Too.
Yeah, but for Stoner, that just all boiled down to honesty.
I think the difference for me compared to some of the others is that I'm actually honest, and people struggle to accept that. That there's a lot of people out there that will say what everybody wants to hear, but they won't say what they're thinking, or they won't say the truth. And the fact that I'm honest seems to rub people the wrong way. So, you know, I don't decide to do that. It's just that I'm not going to say something just to keep everybody happy. You know, and for me, this is a big difference between, you know, even Australians or Americans compared to Europeans, you know, that we're a lot more straightforward and straight to the point. We don't have to say 10 words to get the point across in 2 words. So for me, that moment I was frustrated, of course, but what I really didn't like was that he came to apologize with his helmet on. For me, that was incredibly disrespectful. You know, as a racer, you come up, you face someone, you know, front on, and apologize properly, not with a helmet on, so you can hide your emotions or hide your face that probably he was smiling for whatever reason. You know, for me that was really disrespectful, and that's why I didn't really appreciate it, and that's why I commented like I did.
Obviously your ambition outweighed your talent. That phrase was then and is now probably one of the most famous, and it's going to divide fans of the two men until the end of time, I would say.
Yeah, a classic moment in a classic rivalry, but there's more to the grid than just a duel. One other big rival for Stoner and Rossi from 2008 was, of course, Jorge Lorenzo, who arrived as a pole-setting rookie and immediately started winning. The Australian's relationship with him was quite different to that one that he shared with Rossi.
Absolutely, and now obviously it's even different to how it started out. So let's hear some thoughts from the Australian on one of his great rivals, Lorenzo.
I think Jorge's learnt a lot over the years. I've been racing with him since my second year in the championship. In his early years, I didn't really, you know, like so much the character he was or the way that he rode with us. But there was a turning point in the later years that he changed completely, and his respect for everybody on the grid changed completely, and my respect for him in turn. So since that moment, I've had nothing but huge amounts of respect for him, whether he wins or loses or anything. For me, he's a great champion in that aspect, and somebody who I always enjoyed racing with, because I knew he wasn't never going to do anything stupid to me on purpose. Some other races, you always have to be wary of these things, but with Jorge, I never had to be.
So another rider, now sadly retired as well, who challenged the three of those guys at the front was Danny Pedrosa, who has since joined Stoner in the Hall of Fame as well. Never a Premier Class champion, Pedrosa is another divisive rider on occasion, but for Casey Stoner, it's pretty simple.
Danny, I'm a huge fan of. And, you know, as I say over and over, that, you know, he's one of the fastest guys that I'll ever see on a motorcycle. When everything, he's got everything right and he's healthy and, you know, he hasn't had some bad luck. This guy, on his day, is pretty much impossible to beat, so. He's somebody that, from the first moment I saw him in Spanish Championship, he's been on my radar. He went into GPs and I stayed in Spanish Championship, but we came together a few years later and raced each other. He was always good to race against, always clean, and has been a fantastic competitor over my career. So, you know, I appreciate the fact that I got to race against somebody like him.
And what about the man who took Stoner's place at the Repsol Honda camp after he retired, Marc Márquez? Well, there's more of a two-sided coin for the Aussie in that one.
It's been great, to be honest, to watch Mark progress over the years. You know, he's been hugely entertaining for us, too much sometimes, but, you know, his talent was never doubted. You know, watching him come through KTM, then onto different team with the 125, watching races like what he did in Portugal, came from the back of the grid after crashing and then getting the bike ready again, back out and win the race, was just some really, really exceptional riding through the years. So we knew when he came to MotoGP that he was going to be good. As good as what he became in that first season, we weren't expecting that. I think nobody was. But he did a great job, stayed on the bike when he needed to, and clinched the championship in his first year. So it was hugely impressive, and to be honest, like I said, it's been great to watch him, you know, progress through the years and arrive to what he is now.
So since then, Stoner has had some other comments on the reigning champion, kind of looking at his sort of safety and, you know, getting into that debate. Obviously, Márquez has been a pretty controversial rider at times over the last couple of seasons. What Márquez is now is the rider a lot of fans would love to see Stoner race, and that's kind of the new debate, although sadly, obviously, we never got to see it. So it was mid-2012 when Stoner announced that he would be retiring at the end of the year, and at the age of only 27. But why did he decide to take that decision then?
Honestly, most of the reasons I'm not allowed to say. but let's just say I have my reasons. You know, I've tried to make as many public as I can. Some people still can't understand them, but I just got tired of the system. I got tired of racing, basically. And for me, it lost all the enjoyment out of it. Every number of aspects, and the fact that I was never here for the fame, I was never here for the money. You know, there was no reason for me to stay around. If I want to go and enjoy riding bikes, then I'm going to have to do it somewhere else, because that became the smallest part of our job, was actually riding bikes.
So Stoner's a rider who is very much missed on the grid, a true great and a legend in more ways than simply just in terms of the Hall of Fame. He was a champion who came and conquered the Premier Class, not once, but twice. So how does it feel to ride one of the fastest machines in the world, for one of the biggest talents in the history of the sport, it was almost becomes normal, but not monotonous, because champions are always pushing for more.
I've heard a lot of people speak poetically about, you know, the situation, but I myself, we've been riding bikes our whole lives, so if we were going on it for the first time, I think it would be a big shock to the system, and you could probably explain your emotions or what's going on a lot more. But as we've been riding our whole lives and we've been here for these progressions, you know, the power still impresses you, I suppose, but I'm always looking for more. So there's nothing I can really say to explain it. You know, top speed, you don't really feel it until you're on the brakes. As soon as you hit the brakes and you get the wind in the face, you get a sense of how fast you're going, but until that time, you're focused on where you need to go, you're not thinking about the speed. The acceleration sometimes, when we have exceptional traction, that's when it really makes you realize how powerful these bikes are. And when it's trying to pull you off the back of the bike and you have the only thing you can hold on to it with is your hands, you're not strapped in, you know, you've got no cage around you, and we're doing the speeds that we are with nothing but us on the bike. So there is something, you know, I suppose, scary in some ways, but when you've been doing it for so many years, it just becomes, you know, you're just looking for that next goal, that next step in setup, in trying to brake a little deeper, get the bike to turn a little better. There's always a reason for you riding, not just absorbing the enjoyment.
So that riding, like we've said, has made Zona one of the biggest legends in his sport, but also from his country. Australia has got quite a few champions, and each one very, very different. But how does it feel to him now to be compared to those guys, the sort of Wayne Gardners and Mick Doohans, who had so much success that came before him?
For me, it's difficult still to understand or consider myself that I can be alongside them. You know, especially Mick, who's been my idol for so many years and a good friend of mine now. So what he achieved already was incredible, just on paper. But what he achieved through his injury and his comeback and all these other aspects, nobody in racing history has come close to that, in my opinion. So that makes it all the much better, and that puts him in an area where I don't believe, you know, that I'm at. I don't believe a lot of people are in. So to be considered alongside them, for me, is a little bit difficult to accept sometimes.
So I think that's about all we have now from Casey. He's looking at me a little bit weirdly. What would you like me to say?
Just say, well, hope you all enjoyed that.
Okay. Hope you all enjoyed that.
Bye. Okay. No, that's not how we're ending the actual podcast, but...
Hope you all enjoyed those insights from Casey Stoner. Like we've said a few times, one of the true greats and biggest talents we've ever seen.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll be having more feature interviews like that in future feature episodes. We know it's now... The Qatar GP weekend. That episode will be coming next week, won't it?
It will indeed. So we look forward to that. We'll try and do our best to run around the paddock at LaSalle International Circuit and answer any questions like we've said before.
When this podcast actually comes out.
We will indeed. So please use the hashtag MotoGP podcast and send us in any questions you have, and we'll try and get them answered.
Yeah, absolutely perfect. Well, we'll see you next Thursday. I guess I have one more thing to say, and that is, let battle commence. Sí, perfecto. Go.
I think we should just start with that. Sí, perfecto.
Go.
Ballet. Although we're not talking about ballet today. Talking about Casey Stoner.
Oh, what that man did on a motorcycle was like ballet.
Hello and welcome to the podcast, the MotoGP podcast, that is.
Do it again.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. Oh,